In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
That's what he's doing, absolutely. It's a Pass the Popcorn brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10. Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Alan Adams in the house. Good afternoon, sir.
Again. Good afternoon to you.
How's your weekend?
Pretty good, pretty good. Spent a lot of time at the theater. We're in rehearsals for Escanaba in the Moonlight, and things are coming together swimmingly, I would say.
Excellent. Well, looking forward to that and hearing more about it. But somehow you got to not one, not two, but three movies?
You know, it's funny. I'm not entirely sure how I managed that myself. But here we are. We wound up going to see, we saw the Commuter, The Post, and Molly's Game.
Wow. Well, all three, I'm intrigued to hear what you think. So where do we begin?
Let's start with The Commuter.
Okay.
we've talked about this before on the air, but the last decade or so has seen a proliferation of what I like to call old guy action movies. And the patron saint of that subgenre is Mr. Liam Neeson. And he's back at it again with The Commuter, which is basically, your standard Liam Neeson guy, like, you know, every man except not really an every man because he has all these ridiculous, like, skills, including,
yes.
And that's what it's one of the things that's kind of great about this movie. One of the skills that he has in this movie is the fact that he takes the same train every day. Like, that's one of his skills. I'm not going to go into too much detail because, frankly, it doesn't matter. But he's an insurance salesman, but also a retired police detective because, of course. And he winds up meeting a mysterious woman on his commuter train. This is the very same day that he gets fired from his job.
So he's not the same character as in the Taken.
No, he's not the same dude.
It's just the same story.
I mean, he's the same dude, but he's not he has a different name and stuff. Although, I mean, it doesn't really matter what his name is. It's like Mike McCauley or something like that. Oh my God, there's a moment where, and this is an aside, but there's a moment where they go to an Irish bar. He and his former partner, played by his partner Alex Murphy, played by Patrick Wilson, they go to an Irish bar called Paddy O'Brady's, and I'm like, why don't you just call it Irish McIrish? Like, I mean, it's really all the movie's full of stuff like this. But anyway, he's lost his job. He's on the train. Mysterious woman comes up to him and says, hey, would you do this vague, undefined thing if we offered you a bunch of money? And he's like, well, I need more details. And they're like, well, there are no more details. You have till the next stop to decide. The first payment is hidden in the bathroom. So he goes to the bathroom and pulls like 25 grand out of a heating grate. And then it's like, okay, now you have to do this. And what he has to do is figure out who doesn't belong on the train. And that's why one of his powers is the fact that he takes the train every day because, there are regulars on the train. All he knows is where the person is getting off, and so he has to go. So it's basically him moving up and down the train, trying to figure out, you know, who he doesn't recognize, where they're going, what kind of carry-on bag they have with them, because that's another thing. Like, they have a bag with them, and he's supposed to plant a tracker on them so that the mysterious whoever could, I guess, track the person who doesn't belong on the train. And it go. I mean, like, you use the expression goes off the rails. This one goes off the rails pretty quickly, both figuratively and literally. And it's that's really all you need to know about the narrative as far as that goes.
Now, he can still handle the physical aspects of these roles.
Oh yeah, like there's some punching and some gunfighting and, you know, general. But it's all shot very close up, very quick cut kind of situation. It's like, you know, I mean, he's six. You know, he's in his 60s. Like, but he's in good shape. You know, he's still very, you know, very angular and has that sort of Irish, like, tough guy Irish pointiness that I think is gonna serve him well into his dotage. Look, this isn't a good movie. I don't know if you got that, but I really enjoyed myself because I love these sort of ridiculous movies. And the great thing about Liam Neeson is you get the sense that he understands just how ridiculous these movies are, and is just kind of, you know, it's equal parts, like, kind of into it, and, you know, this, I don't know, it's the performative equivalent of like a shoulder shrug. Like he's like, well, I mean, people keep paying me to do these movies, so I mean, I guess.
Well, what am I going to say? No.
Yeah, you know, it's like, yeah, no, I'm a retired ex-cop who, you know, rides the same train every day. As long as the check clears, I'll be whatever you want. But yeah, again, it's not a good movie, but it's a fun movie. And it's got that sort of elevated, like, B-movie weirdness that I think the best sorts, the best kind of old guy action movies have. So, yeah, like, I mean, it ain't Shakespeare, but you'll have a good time.
All right, that's number one. How about Molly's Game?
You know, I wasn't sure what I was going to think about Molly's Game. I had heard some good things. I had heard some less than good things about it. For those who are unfamiliar, Molly's Game is based on the book of the same name by a woman named Molly Bloom, who spent years running high-stakes poker games, both in Los Angeles and in New York City. The movie is written and directed by Aaron Sorkin. And this is the first thing Sorkin's ever directed.
Right.
Like, he hadn't even... Like, I assumed he had done some, like, maybe some television direction or something. Nothing. Like, this is it. So there's that aspect of it. But, yeah, it's basically the story of this woman, Molly Bloom, played by Jessica Chastain. She's a former elite skier who has a, you know, terrible accident while trying to qualify for the Olympics, winds up kind of losing her way for a little bit, moves to Los Angeles, and winds up sort of as the sort of steward for these high stakes poker games, one of which revolves around, and this is the same way it's treated in the book. She doesn't name names in the book, and so there's a particularly famous Hollywood actor who's referred to only as Player X, played by Michael Cera. But the thing about Player X is literally everyone knows it's Tobey Maguire. It's not Tobey Maguire. Wink, wink, wink,
really?
Wink.
Really?
Yeah, but yeah, no, it's one of those things where I shouldn't say knows, but the general consensus is everyone's pretty sure it's Tobey Maguire, who apparently is a degenerate gambler and kind of a terrible person. but anyway, so she runs these games for a while, and then circumstances lead her to getting sort of tangled up with some less than savory types, which leads to her being arrested, indicted by the FBI, and sort of dragged through the courts in an effort for they're trying to get her to dish on some of the less savory characters who were involved with her games. And she refuses to give them up and has to enlist a lawyer who is played wonderfully by Idris Elba. And that's pretty much it. Although there's an extended subplot involving her relationship with her father, played by Kevin Costner, which we'll get to that in a second. But yeah, it's a pretty good movie. Like, Chastain's great. Like, it's a really great performance from her. But the movie is easily half an hour too long, maybe 45 minutes too long. Like, it's got a runtime of like almost 2 hours and 30 minutes. Oh. And that's just too long for a story like this. I think a lot of it probably springs from the fact that Sorkin was in full control. And I, and this is coming from someone who absolutely loves Aaron Sorkin, from Sports Night to The West Wing, all the way through Studio 60 in The Newsroom. Like, I love what Aaron Sorkin brings to the table. Dude really loves the sound of his own voice. And, you know, when he doesn't have someone there kind of pulling the reins and encouraging him to, as they say, kill his darlings, he can go on a little bit. I think the movie's half an hour to 45 minutes too long, which conveniently enough is almost exactly the amount of time we spend with the relationship between Molly Bloom and her father. Like, if you take Kevin Costner out of this movie, not only do you not lose anything in terms of the narrative, but you actually have a much more manageable runtime. I think that's just me. There would be other ways to deal with that, but regardless. But again, like I said, Chastain's great. Michael Cera, bless his heart. I mean, he does his best to be a dirtbag jerk, but it just doesn't quite take. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, he's just too. There's just an inherent niceness to him that I think he struggles to get past. There are a couple of other good performances. I mean, Costner's fine. Like, it's not that he's bad. It's just that the subplot is unnecessary. And, the poker scenes aren't quite as compelling as maybe you'd hope they would be. But again, and Elba's fantastic because Idris Elba's always fantastic. And yeah, I mean, it's an enjoyable enough movie, but I have to say, the runtime really did me in. Like 220 is just too long.
We're talking with Alan Adams of The Main Edge. All right, let's get to the third film you saw this weekend. All the Presidents Met. Oh no, The Post.
Yeah, The Post. The long-awaited team up between Steven Spielberg, Meryl Streep, and Tom Hanks. It's frankly remarkable that the three of them hadn't collaborated before this, but considering the current climate, they could do worse as far as projects they could have chosen to work on together. The Post is the story of the publication by the Washington Post of the Pentagon Papers, which was basically a decades-long academic study commissioned by the U.S. government regarding the situation in Vietnam. And those papers were leaked, were pulled from, I believe, the Rand Corporation by a gentleman by the name of Dan Ellsberg, and sort of released into the wild. And newspapers really struggled with the idea of whether or not to publish these papers because they are, you know, they're classified U.S. government documents. However, they were also evidence that the government had been lying for literally decades about the conflict in Vietnam and what it meant to the United States and, you know, the realities of whether or not that war was considered winnable. Catherine Graham was the publisher of the Washington Post at the time, played by Meryl Streep. And she was the one who was ultimately tasked with the decision of publishing these papers. She's being urged to do so at the behest of her editor, Ben Bradley, played by Tom Hanks. And and it basically boils down to the back and forth between whether or not they were going to follow through and do this. And bear in mind, and this is something I guess I knew but didn't really know. Like the New York Times was already in court for having previously published some of the information in the Pentagon Papers. And so it's not like there was no precedent set, but the thing with the Post was the Times had already been taken to court, and so there's this added level of, I don't know, legal morass that comes with the idea of publishing stories based on this material. The gentleman who tracked down the papers, a reporter whose name I'm going to butcher, Bagdikian, something like that. I don't remember exactly what his how to pronounce his name. Let's see if I can find it here. Yes, Bagdikian. Oh, I nailed it. Nice. Ben Bagdikian, played by Bob Odenkirk.
Oh, wow.
He's so good in this movie, Rich. I'm shocked that I haven't seen his name bandied about more in terms of awards consideration because he's really good. There's a fantastic ensemble put together here.
Sarah Paulson, who I think is just the best actor going these days.
Yeah, Sarah Paulson plays Ben Bradley's wife. Carrie Coon is in this. Oh, wow. There's a Mr. Show reunion. David Cross is in this movie as well. Tracy Letts, Bradley Whitford. Like, I mean, it's just a who's who of really talented performers. And it's basically this sort of wonderful kind of intrigue kind of movie, and it's so incredible because one of the things about Spielberg is the guy can tell you a story you already know the ending to and make it compelling, and that's a really difficult thing for a filmmaker to do, but he's proven again and again that he's capable of doing that.
And you mentioned that this went back several presidents, because some of the right-wing nut bars are out there calling this before they've even seen it an attack on Republicans and Nixon. But as I understand it, one of the key issues dealt with in the movie is the closeness that Ben Bradley and I think Katie Graham had to the Kennedy administration.
Yeah, John F. Kennedy. Like that was like Kennedy and Johnson both. Like they had real all the way back to Truman. Like it spanned multiple presidencies and nobody got off easy. Like it was one of those things. Like, you know, Nixon takes a hit because he was the guy in the in the chair when all this went down, but guess what, guys? Nixon was awful. Like,
yes.
he did terrible, terrible things. Like, and so, yeah, like he's going to take a hit because he did bad things. Like that's just the reality of the situation. But yeah, like it's, It's not a perfect movie. There are some issues. Spielberg once again succumbs to his weird need to contextualize. So you've got like, you know, the first few minutes are based on, you know, setting the scene, and then the last few minutes like move forward in time to sort of establish this weird bookend context, which is something that he's been known to do from time to time. But you know, you lose the first 3 or 4 minutes and the last 3 or 4 minutes, and the movie doesn't suffer. And you get a really, really taut kind of, you know, journalistic thriller. And, you know, you don't necessarily see those anymore. And, you know, you're going to see them less and less because, as we all know, you know, journalism is having some struggles these days.
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting to see how people react to seeing on the screen the story of, you know, of what it meant to be a reporter. Do you know what I mean? And that's something that I found incredibly compelling. And again, even knowing how it's all going to play out, it was still so incredibly fraught.
How were the box office numbers? Because part of me wondered, in this world of people who, some of whom don't trust media at all, the mainstream media, will there be people who just stay away from this because it celebrates something that they believe is completely corrupt?
You know, it's funny. It actually did better than I was anticipating. The number I saw, I want to say it did, and this is its first wide release weekend, I want to say 18.6 million.
Wow.
I think it was second place in the box office. And granted, second to Jumanji, which has been out for like 3 weeks. But it was the highest grossing new, air quotes, new release of the weekend. And deservedly so, I think. I think it's, you know, it is, ultimately, it is Spielberg, it is Hanks, it is Streep.
She's overrated, though, right?
Oh, my God. She's so good, man. And it's just like, you know, and it's one of those things where it's one of the 10 best performances of any 2017 movie, and it's not even in the top 20 of Streep performances. Mm. And that's, you know, and that's not to say, not to downgrade what she does here, because she's really very, very good. But it's just, she's always very, very good. You know, she's so good that even Hanks is kind of diminished just a tiny bit in the scenes that they share together.
I'm curious to see it too, to see how Hanks plays Ben Bradley compared to what I think of as the iconic performance by Jason Robards in All the President's Men.
Yeah, it's different. Like, it's a very different movie. And I think it has to be, like, just right. because of the time and place in which it's being made. Like, it's interesting, but it's interesting to see how those perspectives have changed, like, and how, you know, how different filmmakers choose to focus on different aspects of a person's reality, of a person's personality. But yeah, The Post, it's gotten a lot of really great attention, and deservedly so. Like, it's a really good movie.
Alan Adams, three movies for your consideration this week on Pass the Popcorn. Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams, every Monday here on Downtown.